Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World. My name's John Harrison. Central Asia is a vast area with a landmass equal to roughly a third of the size of the United States. It's sandwiched between Russia, China, Iran and Afghanistan with a population over 60 million. The European Union entered the region in 2002 and set about implementing a strategy which includes programs on poverty reduction, crime and anti-terrorism and good governance. The EU believes that the presence of secure and democratic governments are the best way to ensure stability in the region, something vitally important not only for Central Asia, the EU thinks, but also to safeguard the interests of the EU in diversifying its oil and gas supplies away from Russia. Now, how successful has this strategy been? Joining me to discuss this issue is Professor Augusto Soto, who is Professor of ESAID Business School at Ramon Llull University in Spain, and also the Director of Dialogue with China Project. We're also joined by Professor Panchuk Stobdan, an expert on Central Asia and India's previous ambassador to Kyrgyzstan. Although many European companies set up immediately after the fall of the Soviet Union, the EU only entered the area in 2002. It came in with a very normative program of aid tied to good governance programs. The EU has no such complex strategy for Latin America or Africa, and yet it trades quite merrily with those two regions. Why should it have, if you say, strings attached to its policy and aid in Central Asia, in your opinion?
Well, I assume that the fact that the European Union has been more for a long time in contact with Latin America and Africa is one factor. It's more familiar with those regions.
Yeah.
For a longer time, democracy is not alien to Latin America, no matter how good those democracies are. And this is one factor. The other factor is that the European Union started relations with Central Asia, a region that knew very little, very much linked up to Soviet times, a little bit obscure somehow, didn't know much. And so also we have to admit that the European Union looks at the world, other regions of the world, from a civilizational point of view, so to speak, thinking that its model could be exported or that the rest of the world should converge to the European Union model. Not exactly the same as the United States, but there is a relationship.
Yeah.
Between how both powers see the rest of the world.
But the trouble is that Central Asia, as you know, is not in Europe. This is a kind of a paradox, is it not?
Yes, I somehow realized it myself when I was teaching at the Diplomatic Academy in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Before the end of the 20th century, actually, the European Union was already there before the end of the 20th century with the TASIS project, Technical Assistance to the Commonwealth of Independent States. And I realized that Central Asians, several members of the elites, shared your view or your question, so to speak. So it's something that the European Union has been somehow learning over the years, that there are different parts of the world with their own traditions. And, the task is to tune the policy to the circumstances of Central Asia.
I think another kind of basic issue is that the EU is not in Central Asia for fun. It's not fulfilling a religious mission of any kind. It's there, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, because the EU needs to diversify its oil and gas supplies away from Russia, which it perceives to be perceives to be unreliable partner. Now, at the same time, we have the Central Asian leaders who are being backed not only by and favoured not only by the EU, but they're favoured by China and by Russia. And so in a way, if I understand it, the CA leaders, Central Asian leaders, are able to, in a way, play off in a very Eastern Asian way, because I lived in China for a while, I know, but it's like different powers against different powers to, in a way, conjure up the best sort of aid that they can from each power. Now, in that circumstance, in those conditions, is the EU right to play the sort of games that it's been playing?
They can play their own story to a certain extent. Of course, surrounded by so many powers, it is complex for them, but that's what they want to do, and that's what European officials have been realizing over these last decades of contact with Central Asia.
Because when the Central Asian republics became independent in 1991, during the fall of the Soviet Union, I think there was, you know, an understanding in Western leaders that the Central Asian countries would only be too happy, in a way, to become more democratic and more like us. Do you think that perhaps we got it slightly wrong? We presumed too much that the Central Asian leader would just happily, voluntarily run into the corral of Western democratic nations, when in fact they haven't done that.
Yes, we had too high expectations, not considering the weight of history, and also the fact that they were, like, so to speak, it's very complex to put it this way, but they were new nations. And in many cases, countries with several nations at the same time. Each country was like a matryoshka, especially Kazakhstan, you know, with 130 nationalities, mainly Kazakhs, but also a significant portion of Slavic population, namely Russians and Ukrainians and Poles and Germans as well, and Greeks, etc. So we did not take into account that that region had to readjust itself in ways that never happened before.
Yeah. Now, the EU has been accused of hypocrisy in that it seems to be preaching good governance and observation of human rights, but at the same time makes substantial oil and gas deals with governments at the West, and not only government at the West, but NGOs inside Central Asian countries, see as being repressive. How does the EU justify this, or does it not justify this, or just ignore it, or what?
I would say it just happens, you know.
It just happens,
ask a European citizen.
Nowadays,
what about the multinational of your own country, the way it behaves internally within the European Union and outside the European Union? I don't know whether we would get an agreement, especially now in terms of crisis. The multinationals are big powers, and they do not go in tune with the democratic system necessarily in principle. We also need to domesticate them as well.
Yeah.
And so when they are outside our frontiers, then, well, there is a challenge for the receptive society or societies in Central Asia. So, it's not something to justify. It just happens.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Let's take a break here.
Brave New World.
Today we're discussing the role of the EU in Central Asia. I'm joined by Professor Panchak Stubdan, an expert on Central Asia and India's previous ambassador to Kyrgyzstan. Actually, Professor Stubdan hasn't been able to get through to us on the phone, but now he's on the phone. And Professor Augusto Soto, Professor of ESAID Business School in Barcelona and Director of the Dialogue with China Project. Now, we in Western Europe and the Western world as a whole are very, very fossil fuel dependent. But there seems to be a tendency now in academic circles, and I believe in even in the oil and petroleum industries, recognize that this is not going to last forever. We need to switch over. Germany's power source is now 30% coming from sustainable sources and so on. Now, bearing this in mind, the EU still has a pretty focused hydrocarbon fuel energy policy. Is it really right for us Europeans to back continued investment into extracting carbohydrates and distributing them, which is extremely expensive, to us in Europe, particularly now with the new situation with Iran?
I don't see that the fossil fuel extraction and delivery is something that will be suddenly overnight. There are vested interests, huge interests by companies, not only European, you know, they're there. And now China is coming with a huge project and infrastructure called Silk Road Project and Belt Road, including maritime and hinterland connections throughout Central Asia, including Russia. And this, I think, will not be exactly like alternative power. One important actor now coming is China. Let's wait and see how China views solar and wind power in Central Asia. Another thing is in China, but what about outside China? And he's a huge, huge player.
Yeah. Another aspect, Professor Stubdan and Professor Soto, is the fact that all of the Central Asia's problems need to be approached from a regional point of view, don't they? And the Central Asian leaders themselves don't really seem to want to cooperate with each other very much. Now, how can the EU do a better job at encouraging regionalism? Professor Stubdan?
Well, then you need to understand what is Central Asian regionalism. So you have to go to the roots of the problem. And there, I think the European contribution to strengthening regionalism is about focusing on the region, because the region is not Russia, region is not China, region is not India, region is not even Iran. So what is that region? So unless you focus on that, you are not going to get any regionalism here. And I don't think in the next 20 years, this concept of Central Asian regionalism is going to emerge, because of, you know, they are in a transition phase. They have to get out of the Soviet mold.
Yeah.
It may take time. You know, regions take a lot of time. Even European Union took a lot of time.
Yeah, understood. Would you agree with that, Professor Soto?
Certainly, yes. It will take a lot of time. Don't forget that the European integration took decades. You could go back into centuries even to talk about.
Sure.
Throughout several wars as well.
Yeah.
So it doesn't come overnight. I'm not predicting wars, but it is a complex issue. The good thing is that there are five countries in this case, if we consider those countries as the ones that were part of the Soviet Union. So that's a good thing. Five. But there are problems, and it takes time.
Now, I've got just two more questions. Now, would you agree with me, in my opinion, that the EU is being marginalized? It's been shut out of the area by China and Russia through the STO, the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement, and through the EU, the Eurasian Union, because the EU is basically not strong enough. And its interests are huge. It has a vast market that it can offer Central Asia, but so does China, and so does Russia.
Yes, I agree with you, but I'm not very clear about the shortage of funds in the EU, but it's about the priorities.
Right.
I don't think the Central Asia is a priority for European Union. Mm-hmm. You have a specific interest. Those need to be addressed. But as such, you don't have a big interest in Central Asia, except for initially Afghan-centric concerns.
Yeah.
Today you may have a Ukraine-centric concerns in Central Asia. But other than that, I think EU is still adopting a wait-and-watch kind of approach. Let these authoritarian regimes go away, and then we'll start. But essentially, how it started 7 to 8 years ago, the EU approach has been to target the next generation Central Asian for the integration process, because the current generation is still in the Soviet mold, and it's very difficult for the EU to change their mind. So you focus on the next generation.
Yeah.
But yes, now I agree, the Russians are reasserting, the Chinese are coming in a big way, so your plans are being blocked, and it makes things very difficult now.
Yeah. Should the EU actually just do something else and start cooperating with the EU and the SCO? Would that be a better policy?
Yes, but the SCO and the CSPO are complaining. Yeah. The European Union and NATO is not even cooperating on even drug trafficking issues. Forget about other matters. And there are a lot of ideological issues, conflict of interest in terms of democracy promotion, which EU promotes, or alternative development promotion that EU promotes. These are in contradiction with the current reality in Central Asia.
Okay, very good. Now, my final question for you both. Can you please help me understand Central Asia's systematic failure to address shared security challenges? Let's just look at that from the angle of, say, water security.
Not just water. I think issues like terrorism, for example, both in Europe and also in Central Asia, Islamic State is a bigger issue now.
Yeah.
The only two common things that you have is the ISIS. Both Europeans and the Central Asians are the target of the Islamic State. So even here, I don't see any effort to come on a common platform to find solutions for it.
Yeah. Professor Soto, your final comment on that?
I totally agree. I would say that we are now at the point of the necessity of cooperation, larger cooperation between the European Union, Central Asia, India, China, Russia, vis-a-vis this challenge of international terrorism and the Islamic State. We need to cooperate in this area, of course, in water, but this emerging threat that has just been pointed out is significant by Professor Stoban.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I thank you very, very much indeed, Professor Panchak Sobdan, an expert on Central Asia, and India's previous ambassador to Kyrgyzstan, and Professor Augusto Soto from the ASEAN Business School in Barcelona, and also the director of Dialogue with China Project. I thank you very much, listeners, and this is the first program in a two-part series on Central Asia. So tune in again next week to hear more about security problems in the region. Thank you very much indeed. Goodbye.
Brave New World.